Too bad I had to be gone. All right, are we live, Scott? All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kulk. It's approximately 1:35. We're meeting for a work session on case number GE-13-99. I don't have any opening comments. I would ask Commissioner Crispin or Fedorchek if you have any comments.
I have none.
Okay, Julie?
Well,
you called for the work session.
So the reason why I wanted to get together to talk about this is we really didn't get a chance to talk about this at the hearing. It wasn't necessarily related to the topic at hand at the hearing. We discussed it briefly. I wanted to get more information from staff and to be able to talk to my colleagues and get their sense on toll mailing, how it relates to this, how our office has handled it in the past, and so that's why I asked for the work session, and also to get an update from Sue on what she's been hearing in the last couple of days from Grayson. I mean, I know time is of the essence here and want to be as responsive as we can to him as well. So that was why I was hoping to be able to get together. So I think it would just be helpful, maybe Alana or Sue, whoever's best, to just kind of give an overview of toll milling, how we've done it in the past, and what are some of the options that you're looking at in relation to what Grayson would like to do, and so we all know what's going on there.
Okay. And toll milling is something that is fairly common in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
With toll milling, toll milling is an agreement for that licensee to provide some type of a tolling service, some type of a processing on behalf of somebody else. Generally, when that happens, you would see the company that is hiring, let's say using Earth Harvest Mills as an example, you know, company A that hires Earth Harvest Mills to do the tolling. Earth Harvest Mills would complete that tolling, and generally it would be whoever they're tolling for that would pay the buyer that has provided the grain for the grain, and then, you know, the tolling payment would go back to Earth Harvest Mills. That's generally how we would see it.
Say that again, so they mill for them, right? They're milling the
right.
Flour? Okay.
Using Earth Harvest Mills, Earth Harvest Mills would take receipt of that grain, mm-hmm. and they are required, whomever is going to do the tolling is required to issue a scale ticket to show receipt for the grain that was delivered there, because they're going to take this grain and they're going to process it, in this case, into flour, and then this company over here is going to more than likely pay whoever provided the grain for the raw grain, and they're going to pay Earth Harvest Mills for the tolling product. So the obligation of Earth Harvest Mills to have to pay for the grain would not occur unless something went wrong between the person delivering grain and the person paying for that tolling, and they would not pay that debt obligation for the grain that was received would go back to Earth Harvest Mills. I don't know that it ever would happen, but staff could never tell you that it would never happen. We just can't do that.
But they don't ever buy the grain. Like, Earth Harvest Mills doesn't ever have to purchase the grain and then mill it and then sell it back or anything like that. They don't buy it. They just have to be responsible for
right.
it. Yeah.
Basically, they're not purchasing the grain. They are providing a processing for compensation product, which is one of the components under which you are required to have a license.
It's basically stored there until the sale's complete. And
it would come
and the sale right is between A and B, not the elevators, so I don't know when that happens, but let's assume it happens when paid. It's kind of a storage concept between when it comes in and when paid.
And does our scale ticket acknowledge that this isn't, is it something on the ticket that acknowledges that they didn't buy this grain, that they're storing it instead?
Generally, the scale ticket would say that it is received on the account for whomever they're receiving it for. And that's one of our indicators, is why if our inspectors are in, they're doing an exam, and they see scale tickets with this kind of information on them, they would go back and look for whoever it was received on account for, like proof of payment from them.
So and received again, for B.
Yes, yes. And that
taken from A, received for B.
Right. But, I mean, this is a little bit different situation because whomever it was received on account for, actually, if they're the grain buyer, may need to have a grain buyer license as well. We've always looked for that person mm-hmm. to have a grain buyer license. I think this straight tolling is really kind of different, and I did hear from a company today that called me and asked me about Earth Harvest Mills because Earth Harvest Mills has been doing some tolling for them. They've been told by Earth Harvest Mills that they, you know, are behind on their tolling. They are behind in providing a product to their customer, which is putting them in a compromising position. I asked if they were owed any money from Earth Harvest Mills, and they said no. So I did get such a call.
But because he cannot toll. Isn't it milling that they're doing?
Milling.
Milling. Milling is grinding it into flour. Tolling is the service that you're providing.
Like a toll booth, like a price for something.
Yeah. Tolling is just the term used by industry.
Oh, they call it tolling.
So there is somebody out there that did express a concern because of the, like I said, compromising position it's putting them in.
Can you explain that again, Sue? I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow their concern, this issue with this company that called today.
This company has routinely hired Earth Harvest Mills to toll for them, to crush a grain into a flour for them. And what this individual told me is that they would, you know, they ship the product over to Harvey. Harvey grinds it, puts it in a bag, and then per their direction, Harvey ships it to wherever they have asked for it to be shipped to, and they are behind on these shipments of this processed product. And
because he's not allowed to do it,
because
right?
he right, can't take grain into
can't
so they aren't concerned about anything that Earth Harvest Mills is currently doing. They're just concerned that he can't do this, and they're behind.
Concerned that they're not getting their contract filled, which is putting them, she
right.
said, in a compromising position is the term that she...
Mm-hmm.
Are they willing to submit a letter with the name on the bottom of that? Is a proposant who is willing to say they are for Earth Harvest Mills being reinstated back their license?
Well, I don't... Would we...
Because otherwise it's hearsay to me. I've had enough hearsay in this case. You've got companies that are willing to put their name, but they want these guys back in business? Have them do it.
I guess that would be up to the company, and I cannot...
But you see what I mean, Sue? This is one more evolution of, is it just strictly coincidental these folks called today? Why didn't they come testify at the hearing? Well, that's... I don't discount what they're saying, but have them put their name on a piece of paper that says that's what their concern is.
Go ahead.
I was just going to
get to the next topic.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention that an attorney representing Roy Bruin/Rowland Seeds was in this morning and visited with Alana and Commissioner Chris Min and myself about the contracts that Rowland Seeds had entered into with Earth Harvest Mills.
He was basically getting caught up on everything.
Yeah,
contracts were part of it, but the hearing, he was looking for the recording.
Yes.
He hadn't known about certain things. So,
and he indicated that he would be returning those contracts to Earth Harvest Mills so that they can...
Well, he was going to talk to his client, and I don't...
His client, he
had some different ideas about things, and I don't know that we should get into any... At this point, commitments of what he thought he was going to do, but he was going to talk to his clients.
Okay.
And he did appreciate the information. We gave him the exhibits. We told him that the recording should be available soon on the Internet. We told him how to look up cases a little easier, and he appreciated all the information.
And I'm not sure if all three commissioners know, but Alana and Tim and I all visited with Grayson at length following the hearing regarding options, if you will. One of the ideas that Grace and Holberg had brought to our attention, and we suggested that he visit with his attorney regarding it. And it was something that was brought up this morning when we met with Mr. Lurvick also, was that I think there is some thought given to Earth Harvest Mills deleting the grain warehouses. They're part of their milling facilities. They have some freestanding bins, of which one is licensed right now, and they would relinquish the license to this disconnected facilities, which would be they'd disconnect the mill from the rest of those bins and consider leasing the milling facilities to Mr. Bruin / Rowland, and then possibly grinding for Roy Bruin. It would be used as Roy Bruin / Rowland, who would provide his grain to the facility. It would be ground into flour at the facility, and then it would be Roy Bruin / Rowland that would be selling the...
But he would be licensed then?
He would not have to be licensed if it was his own grain going into his own mill.
Oh.
He would be just build a mill in your backyard. Now, the other company, except that doesn't satisfy the other company's milling problem.
No.
Unless you're talking about...
Not the one that called earlier. Yes.
It didn't sound like that was too likely after this morning's conversation, but... we did talk about another possibility, and it sort of it's consistent with what Commissioner Calk just said, are they willing to put their name to it? We talked about how to reduce or eliminate the risk. That's what this is all about. That reduces or eliminates the risk to the Earth Harvest Mills bond because the facility is one person's grain going into his own mill and coming out, his own flour. And another one is... there's a general concept of law that a person who's entitled to the benefit of a law can waive their right to that benefit. And I know that doesn't always sit, it doesn't may not seem logical, but it is my legal opinion that a person can waive their right to bond coverage, which is kind of what Commissioner Calk was saying. If that entity wanted to say, I don't care, I specifically, and it'd have to be a tight document in writing that I am not ever going to claim that this was received as a warehouse and that I have bond protection and da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da, waiving their right to it being grain subject to our licensing law. That is conceivable, that it would take some good legal writing to make it happen, but it is conceivable. It is not necessarily something that the commissioners want to entertain, but it was one of the options we talked about the other day, and it's the same kind of thing that Commissioner Calk just mentioned for this other entity. Of course, it wasn't part.
And it would take care of the problem for that entity, but then you can't...
Each entity would have to do it.
That entity with Bruin / Rowland leasing the facilities.
No, but I mean,
one or the other.
Rowland could do the same thing. I mean, everybody could do that. If you had five customers... You could have five such waivers, in theory.
If they wanted to do business with you, here's how you have to do it.
Yes, in theory. And then we also talked the other day about whether there was any way that Grayson could come up with his legal advisors, to shrink the risk, so to speak, in time or money or loads or something, the exposure, which is similar to what you had in your motion. You said, if we ever lift this based on these conditions, you can't have more than 200% of the bond at any one time, you know.
Right.
So something similar to that, like paying in 24 hours or 48 hours, so and proof of that to us so that there would only be 24 hours worth of additional risk before you could slap another cease and desist on them, or something like that. I don't know that he is prepared to offer anything like that. We didn't get... He didn't jump on the idea and say, oh, I could do an electronic payment, you know, in 48 hours. Maybe that would work. He didn't glom on to the concept, but is one I brought up as a possibility.
But even if we do that, if you can't pay for the grain before it is delivered or at that point of delivery, then there is the debt that would increase the
But by a smaller amount than just a total exposure. But so that's where we're at.
This toll milling kind of piqued my interest because it would potentially, if we're, you know, if Rollins or Grayson's thoughts are, you know, accurate, create some revenue for him to, because the way it seems to be going, there's no new revenue generated. It's just staying even or even falling behind because the loan payments aren't being made either to the banks. So, you know, somehow there's got to be some revenue coming in here to make some headway on that sheet of bad debt. And so if this toll, if we can find a way to safely allow this, I think that's worth considering. When you talk about having grain come in that he never has to buy, it seems like couldn't there be some way to contractually prove that he never owned that grain so he wouldn't ever have to have the bond to cover it?
No, the bond doesn't cover just grain you buy. So you, so kind of shift gears in your head and think about storage, which is the initial reason for elevator licensing. Grain that you just sit, that just sits somewhere until you decide to sell it or until it's flour. Okay?
Yep.
That's the concept. It's a lot more buying now than storage in this day and age, but it's the concept that my farmer grain is in. And in fact, this is slightly aside, but one of the cases I read yesterday, because I was trying to refresh my memory, actually had a holding about it's only such places that hold themselves out to the public generally. I sent this to Pat Fawn. I said, I don't make this stuff up. This is from 1935. You know, these warehouses that hold themselves out to the public generally that need this license and therefore this protection. Yeah. So I didn't send it to you guys, but I sent it to Pat.
And that statute, I mean, you can think of it even in a simpler term. A statute says for every load of grain received at an elevator, a scale ticket has to be issued.
Yeah.
So regardless of what happens to it, if you receive it there and it is a public warehouse, you have to issue a scale ticket.
Yeah. And the bond is to cover if something were to happen in to that, or is there a liability insurance or insurance that covers, say, some, there was some damage?
There is insurance for damage. Like, there has to be insurance. It's under our licensing requirement. No, we're not worried about, we're worried about returning the grain or paying the value.
There's insurance if you have a fire or a windstorm or hail or whatever, that type of thing. You would be, you have to carry insurance for the current market value before you even take any grain in.
Now, degrade it like liability because you let it get wet or something and rot or something like that would be a little bit different.
That's not covered by the insurance.
No, I understand that. That would be part of how, if, let's say, a farmer was unhappy and filed a claim based on that, then there might be an assessment of whether, that's what a TIM would be doing, is figuring out, well, what was the value of the grain and what was he truly owed or that kind of thing.
And the elevator has an obligation. If you let somebody's grain get bad, you have an obligation to return to that farmer, if you're returning and not processing, whatever he delivered to you or value equal to what he delivered to you, whether it is more grain or equal amount of grain, and money to make up for the difference.
And the whole lien concept, the reason I kind of emphasize the storage is the whole lien concept and the whole concept of the trustee and an insolvency having access to what's in the facility is comes from that concept of a of storage, of grain being received and a protection for the farmer until the payment of the equal value is made.
But you think there might be a way for customers, if they want to waive their right for protection of the bond?
I think that that's a sound legal concept. In fact, I think over in Title I someplace there might even be a law that says something like that, because I think I found it the last time this topic came up. It's never been a particularly popular concept. But with staff and commissioners and stuff, but it's not, I don't think it's illegal. I mean, we do it in other less, I mean, like less important ways, like a rate case, a company waives its right to have its rates at the end of 30 days. I mean, there's all sorts of statutory rights that people say, I'm willing to go without that.
A strong legal team that knows what they're getting into, not private citizens.
Exactly. I understand that. And, of course, even these people that want it milled, I mean, they would have to fully understand what they were doing.
Well, and that would only be for milling, wouldn't it?
I mean, yes.
You wouldn't waive it for any other purposes but for the toll milling.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm curious. Yeah.
I didn't sense...
We're pretty quiet.
I did not sense Earth Harvest Mills. I mean, a lot of times staff has these kinds of conversations to work out these kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's a comfort level you sense in the company. Like, yeah, I think that might work, and I think I might be able to do it. I didn't sense that from that conversation. I didn't sense it this morning.
Maybe
with Grace, with
the Lervik.
Oh.
Maybe if I could steer back a little bit here, that I'm sensing from Julie. I mean, the tolling, I think, is interesting. But, our basic choices are either we lift it or we don't.
And that's our choice today, yes.
And we don't have to necessarily decide that today. But, no. I mean, I'm just trying to get my head straight what we're all thinking. Where, okay, we could just agree today, all three of us say, just lift a cease and desist, and we could just take whatever risk is there and address it every 30 days. So that might be a choice. Or you could lift it with conditions that we could craft or not craft that we may or may not have done before. Or we could just say, no, we've already got a cease and desist out there that says, if you meet these conditions, we'll lift it. I mean, is there any other choice in that mix that I'm missing?
I don't think you're missing, and I'm just going to add, and this is why I made the last comment. I think that you would ought to require something from the elevator in addition to what we heard at the work session, I mean at the hearing, as a basis for, I mean, unless you thought what you heard at the hearing was a basis for lifting, what I'm trying to say is that I don't know that it's our job to produce an option that might work. We have brainstormed with him, but I think now he has to produce one.
We don't provide legal counsel to anyone.
Right.
And that's what I feel like we do sometimes when we do these things. It's up, you know, the companies come back with, this is what they want to do for the corridor changes. And then we say, we'll see if we can help get to where you want
right.
to get to. Not where we craft a solution.
Right. And we did have some involvement in brainstorming.
Yeah.
But at this point, I think we have to hear if Grayson has some plan or request.
Let me ask, this is one thing I'm still a little unclear from. These Canadian companies, what protection do they have? How do they get back there? If we just shut the doors and don't ever open it again, what do the Canadian companies do? Are they just out that money?
They're the same claimant as anybody else.
Okay, so there's no difference that they're Canadian at all? Or
no.
Then why do we get concerned like when we were having before about selling, there was something to do with, we wanted to go into an agreement with a company from India, and one elevator wanted to do that, and we said, because we couldn't go back and get those assets from an Indian company. Remember, it was that clear soybean oil or something? And I remember there was a heightened sense that we all three of us had at that time that we couldn't go after the assets if need be.
I think they were asking for the commission to...
I can't...
They wanted a license, and they were asking for the commission to accept a letter of credit in lieu of filing a surety bond with us. And there was some concern because
the
Indian letter of credit or something.
It had nothing to do with it. It was an Indian company. It had to do with the letter of credit vice the bond?
Yes.
Right.
And the foreign company might have made the letter of credit more scary, and I know Bill's advice has always traditionally been they're scary anyway. So,
and I think there might be some limitations as to, like, in order to get a letter of credit here, you might have to have
a Canadian company, that it'd be an Indian company or a European company that could have these assets? Because I guess I'm surprised that U.S. assets, money paid in, would go to Canadians.
Well, it goes to producers.
We can't even get them to Montana. I mean, I'm serious.
Whoever has delivered to the elevator that goes in solvent.
Okay, yeah. That's how it works.
Doesn't matter. And, like, if they were to do this leasing and stuff, they wouldn't be licensed. We wouldn't care about them. They to whatever they have to do.
It is not uncommon when we have a failure to have claimants from Canada, from Montana, from South Dakota, from Minnesota, wherever. That is not uncommon at all.
But it gets slipperier when we start dealing with other states. I mean, we've had problems with Montana claimants and Minnesota claimants.
It's slightly more complicated, but it's more due to the details of the operation than it is to where they were. I mean, there could be a very simple insolvency with claimants from different countries and states, but it could be super simple. It isn't that, I don't think, so much as it is.
Going forward to an insolvency, would you just view this as a very complex insolvency or a less complex insolvency based on what we've seen before?
I don't know. We know so much more about his operation. Might be simple.
Or it could be getting through all of the bookwork could make it a little more complex.
Yeah.
I mean, it's separating what we really have jurisdiction over and what we don't.
One thing
have
that
jurisdiction
I've struggled with this whole thing is he talks about all these people willing to invest. Well, couldn't he just get a pot of money that comes in from somewhere and pay off all these people
that's
and be done with it?
That's what we've been thinking and
that's what, I mean,
for a couple
really,
of years.
He's got $85,000 of cash debt out there. If somebody's really willing to do this, they give him a loan for $100,000. He pays off all these cash claims. The rest of these he's already converted to deferred payment plans, and he's out of the woods.
I think the difference is you said willing. I don't know that he said willing. He's said he's talked to them. And
he said he's talked to 14, and he's down to
but
these
no
two.
One, I don't
that means
know that.
12 have said no thanks.
But that's kind of where, I mean,
willing
if, you,
is the key.
If you want to know where I'm at right now, is there would have to be something really significant for me to even consider lifting the cease and desist. Because I think he can do things. $100,000 is a lot of money for the average person, but this is a company. Mm-hmm. If someone that understands what's going on up there, his local banker isn't even willing to give him $100,000, that says a lot.
Well, because there's more behind that, but the $100,000, I think. But what I am curious, lifting the cease and desist is what, you know, we had the hearing about, et cetera, et cetera. He even said in the hearing, I don't have any real hopes of you lifting the cease and desist. But I thought what he'd like is a partial lifting or to allow toll milling. I don't know if that's possible. It's probably unprecedented.
But it's up for him to produce that solution, not us.
Yeah, I agreed and understand what's been going on to that end since and just kind of wanted to get your guys' sense, too, if that's even worth considering, if it's even on the table for you guys.
Regardless whether it's possible or not to work the legal details out with toll milling, here's my thoughts on it. I'm starting to regret doing it, but we tried to help keep this thing going during the course of this winter and just issued the cease and desist and then set a potential meeting based on a string of things that needed to be done in order to get the cease and desist order lifted, which included getting the contract signed, committing to not having outstanding bills exceeding 200% of his bond level, and then the rest of that plan of action. Well, he still hasn't committed to keeping the bills down if the cease and desist were lift to 200% of the bonds. The plan of action is, it seems like each time another picture in this continually changing picture of plan. And there was some progress made with some of the customers in getting a few of them paid up or converted to contracts. But the big amount is basically an elaborate shell game and an attempt to, it appears to me, defraud our indemnity fund. And I guess at this point, I am not comfortable in opening up another avenue here to carry on business, because my fear is that by doing that, we're going to potentially extend the string of victims here. And I don't know if they get into something that makes some money, We don't know that that money is going to be used to pay back various people that are owed money from this facility proportionately, or whether it's going to all go to a couple management people or a couple particular people who are owed money or what. But we never get an accurate picture of what's going to happen. And until they come in with that, frankly, if there were a claimant on the table, I think the best thing for the people that it's our responsibility to protect here would be if we could get this into an insolvency and put a stop to this before the victim string grows. But we don't have that, so I think for now the best thing we can do is sit right where we're at with the cease and desist in place and wait for them to bring in the things that we originally asked for. The financing plan of action that can be he talked about that this cease and desist or lack of ability to do milling is problematic for his lenders. Frankly, you know, when you purchase something bigger, large equipment or a home or land or something, there are contingencies in place, but you do bring in paperwork and evidence of where you're at with things. And if someone were in here and the loan or the equity position that they're proposing to get in exchange for cash to make this thing work were contingent upon us lifting the cease and desist order, that would all be perfectly appropriate. But a couple of very unusual contracts and a few pieces of new information and a plea for the ability to try something different, to me, just doesn't make it anymore.
Well, we've basically prevented the string of victims from increasing with the cease and desist. So I don't see where the risk of that is, you know, saying that's going to grow.
As long as the cease and desist mm-hmm. is in place, it
yeah.
can grow. But if we lift it, it could grow.
If we lifted it, but I don't think any of us are talking about fully lifting the cease and desist. If you lifted the cease and desist for toll milling to give him better standing with his potential investors and some way to generate revenue, do we give him the ability to pay off some of these people?
I would not be against anything that he files to look at. So if he files a plan that says, I'd like the cease and desist to be lifted for toll milling only, I've got this string of contracts that are in place that are signed, and like Randy just said, that may be contingent upon us listing that, that'd be cool to look at. But I think it's up to him to
yeah.
provide it.
I agree. The ball's in his court. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts, and since we didn't get a chance to talk through this during the hearing. So,
Randy brought up the point about the contract, and I was just stumped when there was a contract that basically he admitted was an illegal contract. That, I don't know, maybe illegal is not the right word, but it was a contract,
legitimate,
inappropriate contract that he said, here's my number of here, and the company, which is going to be late, filed Exhibit 3, the company is this, and this is a contract that wasn't either one. I thought it didn't give me any trust in the business operations when they've got a contract that there's no basis for it other than just sign this. I was really troubled by that.
Yeah, we discussed that this morning with the other side of the contract's attorney, and that's why they're going to be discussing it. And the attorney understood that such things have to be represented by scale tickets and who the scale ticket was issued to and all of that and what would happen in a claim if they do come back and refile a contract for, you know, well, one of them and two of them are rescinded.
Why would any person of legal ability tell their client to sign something?
I don't know that he was involved with that at all.
Okay. All right.
At
so
all.
He probably was as dumbfounded
right.
as he's, we were when we heard that.
He may have. I don't know how much pre-involvement he's had, okay?
Yeah.
However, if that does happen, then that number, if that happens like a contract for 380 or whatever the one was, that number the rest of that balance becomes a cash obligation against the bond. You know, so that cash picture on the yellow sheet begins to look worse too. I wanted to ask Sue, you probably know this. I should have thought of this at the hearing, but I didn't. But how many of those overdue amounts, any of the amounts on the yellow sheet that I didn't even bring with me, Exhibit 1, was grain received for toll milling, if you know?
I don't believe that anything on this sheet was for toll milling.
Not even Rollins?
I'm not aware of anything being
okay.
for toll milling.
Okay.
And I believe that, I mean, with I'll put Grayson on the stand and asking him.
Okay.
According to the numbers that Tim has been tracking for scale tickets issued and what is owed,
okay.
I think this reflects for grain received, grain
okay.
delivered.
Okay. That's good.
I thought
in this conversation, maybe we should ask if you had any knowledge about that.
Another issue that came up in the hearing that I wanted to explore is and get more information on is bankruptcy. And I'm curious how bankruptcy and insolvencies interact.
Well, bankruptcy is a process that happens in the bankruptcy court. If Earth Harvest Mills were to go into a bankruptcy, there is an automatic stay that comes into play, and before the commission could go forward with our insolvency process, the bankruptcy court would have to give us a relief from stay.
That automatic stay applies to everybody everywhere. You cannot collect a debt once a person files bankruptcy. No one can take any action to collect any debt.
So we can't go into insolvency if they
no. We have to get a relief from stay first, and usually we do.
Okay.
Because it's
so this has happened.
Yes.
Yeah, makes life more complicated, but yes, we have a little bit of experience with it.
And depending on what kind of insolvency or bankruptcy you have, whether it is a liquidation or whether it is a reorganization, that may make a difference as to if it would be a reorganization.
Northwood comes to mind.
Grabowski,
Verisign, yeah. maybe not Mitchell, but it almost.
Julie, it is a point of contention between different lobbying groups because the bankers get the first bite at the apple.
Yeah. Right.
And so that's basically what
in a bankruptcy. Yeah. And I'm just curious in terms of
Well, secured creditor.
With the sale, potential purchase, if people are out there buying it to go into bankruptcy, you know, buying it with the intention of going into bankruptcy.
Yeah. That's a possibility. And the farmers have a prior position in bankruptcy also, okay, in the sense that there is a lien on the grain. The trouble is there isn't any grain, okay? If you're storing a big elevator full of grain, then the lien makes a difference. If you're not, it doesn't matter, okay? So that's when you get a relief from stay when there's the Wimbledon or whichever the one was with a long liquidation process and stuff, there's a lot more involvement in bankruptcy before the commission gets around to doing the payouts. But if it's simply just there's nothing there anyway, go to the bond, then they'll give you a relief and you go to do your bond.
Lana, how would it play out if, one of these people that's owed cash files a claim, and these people that are covered under their contract, if you will, the deferred payment plan, when the insolvency is filed, is it just who's owed cash money then?
No.
Then we do the notice to people based on the list that we have and publish in the paper, and anybody who's owed for grain delivered would file.
The deferred payment plan isn't for a year.
Right. Well, if it's for a year, they still are owed money now that this elevator is closing down kind of thing, insolvent. So they're going to file. If we, for some reason, decide that they're not owed anything, that would come out in the report.
So it really doesn't matter at Hill of Beans whether they've just how they would be paid.
Right.
Before payment can be made from the indemnity fund, you have to have an elevator or licensee has to be insolvent. So once you get a claim for insolvency, it doesn't make any difference what kind it is. And yes, I think you're, I mean, the payment date, I mean, if you're forcing somebody into an insolvency, there isn't an opportunity under that license for them
to pay later.
Pay. So it all goes against the trust.
Well, for that matter, you could have a farmer that was at 10 days. Okay. So he's not really in violation or anything yet, but that farmer would be still a claimant.
Yes. Got it. Okay. Fair enough. Anything else?
I did call Grayson to let him know that there was going to be this work section at 1:30, and I did ask him if he had heard anything whatsoever regarding any potential investment dollars, and he said no, he had not.
And you also called Lervik, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think it's pretty clear to me, and I think Randy and Julie said kind of the same thing. It's in his court.
Right.
Submit a plan that he wants us to look at, and we look at it.
Okay. Well, and I trust he is listening, so like you said, the ball's in his court.
All right. Anything else?
One more thing I did want to bring up, that one other thing that we mentioned to Grayson when we just talked the other day was that we explained to him what happened in the case of Anderson Seed and the fact that when Anderson Seed sold their facilities to another company, there was all of this liability for which, you know, they owed farmers and farmers weren't paid, and the application was pending for a very long time and before the commission, before ultimately a license was issued, not to the company that purchased or bought that company, but that applied for a license here, a sister company, and that there was some opposition by the attorney representing some of the claimants in that situation. So we did tell him that, you know, who comes in, and depending on if they take care of receipt holders or don't take care of receipt holders or claimants, you know, there could be some question and some timing and some consideration given before the commission would act on a license application.
It wouldn't happen overnight, is what we were guessing. The staff was guessing.
I would never prejudge a case, but that last one, I barely got to that yes. And that was a whole different set of variables and a whole different product line.
Yeah, we just wanted them to know
a lot of hoops that would be jumped through here first.
Yeah. Hey, so we had a plan to solve this problem now.
Okay. And I just want to confirm for the record that based on the hearing and anything that it's been an update since then, commission is not directing staff to prepare any documents to lift the cease and desist. Right?
Okay. Plans portfolio, I don't think,
okay.
I think it's
not,
clear.
Not for me.
Okay.
And then just for Randy and Julie, too, is the portfolio holder has the motion if they want it. But if you're not the portfolio holder, can you still bring a motion?
I think you certainly can, yeah. I mean, we sort of default to the portfolio holder, but yes, you can. And I don't know that we have a policy with any special hoops you would jump through or anything for that. I'd have to look. But you certainly, anyone's entitled to, you know, bring a motion about anything.
Briefly, though, if we are in a hold pattern, though, if he doesn't do anything, then we don't do anything. But then at what point, I guess, do we do more than a cease and desist order without a insolvency? We may have to talk. If 30 days from now nothing has happened, we probably should talk again. Just
yes, I agree. You know, we would have to visit it at that time.
That's the only guidance
again.
I can think of is this is not open-ended, that we should visit again in a couple of weeks or a month. That
one would think when that place isn't doing any work, one of these people is going to turn in a claim.
Yeah. Or something else is going to happen, like a bankruptcy or something. Yeah.
Staff has had a number of calls this week, so that would not be a surprise.
But we'll make sure it doesn't fall through the cracks. It'll come back on an admin or something.
Okay. All right. Going once, going twice. Julie, Randy?
Nothing more.
All right. With that, we'll close the work session on GE 13-99. Thank you.